Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. Last week, in a multi-day hearing, prison advocates and people behind bars asked a federal judge in Texas to declare the state's prison system's lack of air conditioning as unconstitutional and cruel and unusual punishment. They also asked the judge to force the state of Texas to fully air condition a prison system that houses more than 130,000 people. The Texas Tribune reports that advocates describe Texas prisons as so hot that inmates would cool off by splashing themselves with toilet water or faking suicide attempts to get moved to cooler medical areas. Marcy Marie Simmons spent 10 years in a Texas prison. She told the AP what it was like to endure extreme heat behind bars.
So I experienced very harsh conditions because of the heat. In the summer months, I experienced things like loss of appetite, dizziness, an inability to sleep at night. I was forced to take measures into my own hands, trying to cool off my body temperature. Things like wearing wet clothes, even flushing the toilet several times so the water gets cold, and splashing toilet water on my body. Very dangerous. People are getting sick and even dying because of the dangerous temperatures. The last summer that I was incarcerated, which was 2020, that summer, there was a thermometer in our dorm that was pretty high up. It had a piece of electrical tape over that thermometer, so we couldn't read the reading. The maintenance crew would come in with their ladder and look at it. We decided we wanted to know how hot it was. When I peeled back that electrical tape, the reading on that thermometer was 136 degrees Fahrenheit in the dorm where I was living with 101 other women. I was panicked. It frightened me. It also made me feel a little bit justified in knowing how I was feeling, that I wasn't crazy, that it was that hot. They would cut themselves or overdose on medication and have their bunkie tell the officer or staff so that they could get taken to the crisis management center, which is air conditioned. They wanted relief from the heat and they were desperate for it. With the climate changes, we are going to see even more heat-related illnesses and deaths. It's a very scary future.
That was Marcy Marie Simmons, who spent 10 years in a Texas prison. Thanks to the AP for that clip. A recent study published in Nature Sustainability found that from 2016 to 2020, 118 state prisons, county jails, and other detention facilities experienced an average of 75 or more days annually when the indoor temperature felt like 82 degrees or higher. Most of these facilities were in Southern California, Arizona, Texas, and inland Florida. The study's authors argue that, quote, identifying where incarcerated people are exposed to hazardous heat conditions is fundamental to advancing environmental justice for one of the most marginalized and disempowered communities in the United States, end quote. We should also say that that study points out in 44 states, universal air conditioning is not required in these facilities. So what will it take to provide air conditioning for 2 million people behind bars in the United States, and who is advocating for this community? Sarah Hopkins is a fellow at Inside Climate News, where she writes about environmental justice and the intersections between climate change and the law. Her recent piece, U.S. Prisons and Jails Exposed to an Increasing Number of Hazardous Heat Days, focuses on the recent study on extreme heat and the prison system in the U.S. Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for the invitation.
Victoria Law is a freelance journalist and author covering the intersections between mass incarceration, gender, and resistance. Victoria Law is the author of 3 books, including Prisons Make Us Safer and 20 Other Myths About Mass Incarceration. Her forthcoming book is titled Corridors of Contagion: How the Pandemic Exposed the Cruelties of Incarceration. Victoria Law's recent piece in The Nation is called The Scorching Temperatures Are Turning Prison Cells into Furnaces. Hi, Victoria. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for covering this.
Well, thank you both for your important work. We've done a lot of shows about vulnerable communities who have no choice but to work outside, like farm workers, or people who work, putting in Amazon factories all day and how hot that is. And so I feel like those communities get some media attention, but people behind bars do not get as much attention. So first off, Sarah, can you talk about how alarming the situation is, given that so many people behind bars in this country do not have access to basic air conditioning, and we are seeing more hot days than ever?
Yeah, so this is really an emerging area for scientific research, speaking of the study you just mentioned, Rosa, because we're really only just starting to see scientific research emerging showing the environmental risks to incarcerated populations, particularly extreme heat. You know, the study you just mentioned is one of the first that I've seen that really tries to account for heat risk at a national level across all different types of U.S. carceral facilities. You know, we're talking about U.S. state prisons, jails, which are under the remit of counties, U.S. immigration detention facilities. You know, previous studies have only been able to parse out environmental exposure in specific states. For example, a study came out last year from the University of Colorado, which found that the majority of incarcerated people in that state are at risk of exposure to extreme heat. But really now, we're starting to get a handle on the data at a national level. And that's what's really significant, because we know that America still has one of the highest incarceration rates in the world at this point. So it's an extremely vulnerable population. We know that this is a population that is really dependent on administrations to keep themselves safe. And we know that this is a population that also does not have freedom of movement. So it is really at risk of being subjected to climate hazards that people simply cannot escape.
Sarah, you talked about how these are people who do not have freedom of movement. And if you can just visualize someone behind bars, and let's say it's 100 degrees, the one question I was thinking about is, do they have the right to ask for water? I mean, do they have regular access to water behind bars? Do you know?
So I think it really depends on the administration. It really depends on the facility. You know, the U.S. has a vast landscape of carceral facilities. Again, there are state facilities, county-run jail facilities. So there's really no one regulation that rules over them all. But going back to Texas, I know that the Texas Department of Justice has defended their protocols by saying that they provide people with extra water, they provide people with access to cool respite areas. But in the lawsuit that was referenced earlier, the plaintiffs are alleging that that is, you know, water being provided, access to extra water, it is not enough to keep themselves safe from the heat. So again, it really depends on which facilities we're talking about. But in Texas specifically, the plaintiffs are alleging that having access to water is really not enough to mitigate the effects of extreme heat in those facilities.
Victoria, what would you like to add?
I agree with everything that Sarah said. I also wanted to add that it's not just the administration, but it also is the day-to-day staff who are supposed to be operating the jails and the prisons. So people, unlike people on the outside, so even the people who are migrant farm workers or working in Amazon warehouses or working in factories have some very limited ability to, say, access water. You could have a water bottle with you, perhaps. Whereas when you are incarcerated, you are dependent upon the day-to-day staff to give you access to this water. I mean, in California, in Central California, women have reported in July, when temperatures reached 110 degrees, being denied ice water because there were not enough staff, or because the staff did not feel like going to the kitchen and transporting coolers full of ice back to the housing units. So even though on paper they were supposed to have access to ice water regularly, that did not translate into actual practice. In Texas, where there is an ongoing lawsuit, what the prison calls short staffing, or not having enough staff to operate the prison day to day means that there often aren't staff members who are available to hand out cups of ice water or bottles of ice water to people who are locked in their cells all day or locked away from where there might be water. So people are resorting to using the lukewarm water that comes out of the sink in their cell or toilet water to be able to splash themselves. So it's not just the administration, and what the administration has on paper does not always translate, particularly as we see prison and jail populations either continue to stay at pre-pandemic levels or rise, and the number of staffing not rise along with it. We're going to keep seeing these kinds of disparities between what the prison says that they do during these heat waves and what actually happens to the people who are locked in these conditions.
And Victoria, why is it the case that in 44 states, universal air conditioning is not required in these facilities?
I think it is because, by and large, the United States does not care about people in prisons. We have this mindset that if you are behind bars, whether you are in jail or if you are in prison, you have done something wrong, and therefore you get whatever brutal punishment you deserve whatever the brutal punishment is that comes along with it, whether it be lack of health care, enduring these extreme temperatures that just are getting hotter and hotter as the years go on, not receiving adequate food, not being able to see your family. So we have this idea that you get what you deserve. For their part, states don't want to spend the money on air conditioning, even though it is sometimes cheaper to put in a cooling system than it is to fight a court order to do so. In Texas, several years ago, Texas spent $7 million to defy a court order or to fight a court order that told them to put air conditioning into one unit. And when they finally relented and did so, the cost of air conditioning that one prison cost less than $4 million. Wow. But the state was so set on not providing this, what is basically a necessity in a place where temperatures rise to 100 degrees and people are locked in their cells without any way to access cooling areas on any sort of regular or needed basis, that they were willing to spend almost double the amount of money fighting against that. Mm-hmm. And we can replicate that again and again and again in all of these states and all of these jurisdictions as well, because jails also get to do, by and large, operate as their own independent fiefdoms. I will add one more thing before I let you ask the next question, which is that in Texas, since 1994, the Texas Commission on Jail Standards has passed a law that said that jails have to be between 65 and 85 degrees. They cannot be lower than 65 degrees. They cannot go higher than 85 degrees, which means every jail has some sort of air conditioning and some sort of adequate heating system. So we don't need to have a nation in which people perish or are in danger of perishing under these types of extreme temperatures, except that we have this notion that people need to be perpetually punished all the time for what they have done.
Victoria Law is a freelance journalist and author covering the intersections between mass incarceration, gender, and resistance. Sarah Hopkins is a fellow at Inside Climate News, where she writes about environmental justice and the intersections between climate change and the law. And in the first half of today's One Planet series, we're talking about extreme health raising health risks for people behind bars. There's a new study out. Sarah wrote about it for Inside Climate News. It looked at the heat exposure of more than 4,000 prisons, jails, and immigration detention facilities across the U.S. Since the 80s, researchers found that the number of hot days per year increased at over 1,000 facilities, yet none provide universal access to air conditioning. Let's talk about specific stories here, because we heard that clip from Marcy Simmons. You can't even imagine to be behind bars and having to endure 130-degree heat. Sarah, you started your piece with Marcy Simmons. You write, Marcy Simmons thinks back to her days in a Texas state prison as a cruel game of psychological planning for the summer. She said, in April, you start preparing yourself for the heat. Toward the end of May, when it starts to get hot, you start telling yourself, okay, it's only 4 months of this really bad heat. And then you kind of count down in your mind. It's a mental game of survival. Marcy was incarcerated in Texas state custody for more than a decade. She did time in the Dr. Lane Murray Unit, a state-run women's prison in Gatesville, one of many such facilities nationwide that does not have air conditioning in the living spaces. To keep cool on hot days, she and other women would lie on their cell floors in puddles of water drawn from the sinks. Can you tell us more about Marcy? I mean, we heard her clip earlier, but what else stood out for you in the interview you did with her?
Yeah, she really described her suffering in very vivid terms, and it really dovetailed with what other formerly incarcerated people in Texas have described to me. She, among other formerly incarcerated people, told me that they'd witnessed people, particularly elderly people in the prisons, falling very ill. They told me they'd witnessed vomiting, seizures, fainting. They also told me that they had attempted to get relief from the heat by filing formal complaints to the prison system every summer. Simmons in particular told me that she'd filed complaints every summer for 10 years, but the prison system came back to them and just said there was nothing they could do. People described the grievance system as a joke. That was their words. They said that people in the prisons rarely, if ever, saw anything happen because of complaints from their grievances. So I think that that particular point about the grievances, i.e. the formal complaint systems in the prisons, is really interesting, because some legal scholars have raised concerns that incarcerated people may have few effective means for raising safety concerns about prison heat through the legal system. And that includes through the grievance system, because legislation from the 1990s called the Prison Litigation Reform Act actually requires incarcerated people to file complaints with administrative officials before filing a lawsuit. And some legal scholars have argued that those administrative officials may be the very people who are violating the rights of incarcerated people in the first place. Therefore, they should not be acting as judge and jury on these complaints, and that that could therefore interfere the ability of incarcerated people to bring lawsuits defending their right not to suffer from cruel and unusual punishment at the hands of carceral systems. And of course, some legal scholars do believe that extreme weather conditions will lead to increasing violations of that right, and that the Prison Litigation Reform Act may present a barrier to redress for some incarcerated people. But of course, we do see in this Texas lawsuit that is exactly the right that the plaintiffs allege is being violated. And interestingly, in that lawsuit, the plaintiffs noted that the Texas Department of Criminal Justice in less than a year had processed over 5,000 heat-related grievances. So I thought that that was just a really interesting anecdote I'd repeatedly been told that people had really tried to bring their complaints and their testimony before the prison system itself, but received no real redress from that system.
Marcy Simmons is now advocating from the outside, and she told you that she receives letters from people on the inside who tell her about the many ways they try to survive, like stopping their psychiatric medications, which have heat warning labels.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, the researchers, that dovetails with something that the researchers pointed out in that study that we've been discussing, where they noted that the risks of extreme heat exposure in prisons may be especially severe for incarcerated people with mental illnesses. And That's because many psychiatric medications can impair the body's ability to regulate heat. You know, we know that about 43% of people in state prisons have reported a history of mental health issues. That's according to the U.S. Department of Justice. So that really is an area of concern for many people. The number of people taking heat-sensitive psychiatric medications in state prisons may represent a subset of that 43%. How much, we don't know. But that is an area of concern that people are keeping an eye on. And yes, Marcy Simmons did tell me that people repeatedly write to her at this point, telling her that they're very scared. They don't know what to do. They have heat warning labels on their medication, and so they opt not to take them as a desperate measure to keep themselves safe from the heat.
Victoria, you also start your piece in The Nation with a similar story, but this one takes place in Chowchilla, California. On July 4th, temperatures reached 109 degrees. You write, that day, according to women in her housing unit, 47-year-old Adrienne Bulware waited for her medications in the yard at the Central California Women's Facility, the second largest women's prison in the nation. While those in line wait under an awning, they're still outside and exposed to the elements, including the scorching heat. Bulware attempted to cool off by showering shortly after women in her unit said she became incoherent. She was unresponsive when her roommates asked if she was okay. Then, according to their account, she dropped to the ground and her legs began shaking. According to the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, she was transported to a hospital and she died 2 days later. Can you tell us more about Adrienne Bulware and what do we know at this point?
Well, what we know is very little. What CDCR, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, said in a statement to myself and other media was that Adrienne Bulware's death, quote unquote, appeared to be caused by ongoing medical conditions, not the heat, which is very similar to what the Texas Department of Criminal Justice said last year when 37-year-old Elizabeth Haggerty died at the Lane Murray unit 10 days after she was transferred there from a prison that had air conditioning. And I want to draw on the work of Dr. Ruha Benjamin, who calls this structural gaslighting, in which systems misattribute the causes of premature deaths to people's individual biological factors rather than what actually hastened their deaths. So in Dr. Benjamin was talking about, say, instances of police brutality, the coroner initially saying that George Floyd's death was not caused by a police officer kneeling on his neck for nearly 9 minutes, but because he had pre-existing health conditions. And what we see when somebody dies in prison during these heat waves of what very much points to a heat-related death is we see the prison say, well, this person had pre-existing conditions. They had asthma, they had diabetes, they had, you know, this other health concern, instead of saying, hey, why is it that we have people, why do we have temperatures that reach 110 degrees? In Chowchilla today, temperatures are supposed to get up to 105 degrees. And California uses evaporative coolers or swamp coolers to supposedly cool their prison housing units down, and which people imprisoned across California say do very little, especially when temperatures get to be that high. Gatesville is supposed to reach 97 degrees today. In New York, where I am, temperatures are supposed to reach 91 degrees, and New York prisons also do not have air conditioning or any way for people who are incarcerated to cool down. So what we know about Adrienne Bulware is that people really liked her. She was known as a mentor for women who were coming into the prison, mm-hmm. both younger women and women who were her age but were newer to the prison system. She was supposed to go up for parole, I believe, within a year or a year and a half of her death. Mm-hmm. So she would have, you know, had she been released sooner, she would have been able to be at home and not subjected to 110 degree temperatures. Even if she was released to a home without air conditioning, she would have some freedom of movement to be able to perhaps go someplace that does have a way for her to cool down. And what we know is that this death could have been prevented in any number of ways, including saying, why do we need to have this person still in prison? Or why do we have prisons that are 110 degrees? Why, you know, why are we not looking at ways to reduce prison populations, given that we see temperatures are going to continue to rise? These prisons are not equipped to deal with this extreme climate change that is going to keep soaring. And what are the ways in which we can mitigate conditions for the people who are still inside instead of fighting all the time against this?
And we should say Adrienne Bulwer was a mother and a grandmother, and as you said, an esteemed community member. And it's just such a devastating story, just 47 years old. We're going to have to do another show about this. One more question for you, Victoria, just briefly. California is a state run by Democrats. Texas is a state run by Republicans. When it comes to these issues, do they differ?
They really do not. I mean, we have to remember that California was the second state to implement a three strikes and you're out law, and it was the one that had a lot of reverberation. So there is this addiction to perpetual punishment that characterizes Texas, California, and most states, if not all of the states across the country, because politicians continually seek to be tough on crime or to appear tough on crime, even if it means that it is hastening the deaths of those inside and also devastating family members and communities on the outside. So, and we as a nation and we as individual states and we as individual taxpayers are the ones that are funding this by pouring millions of dollars into incarceration, despite the fact that it not only does not increase public safety, but it also continually fails to provide people with the basics for living, like hydration and nutrition and living conditions that are not lethal.
And we should also say that women are the fastest growing population behind bars. Most of them are mothers. So we're definitely going to continue to cover these issues. So important. Victoria Law is a freelance journalist and author of three books, including Prisons Make Us Safer and 20 Other Myths About Mass Incarceration. You can find Victoria's recent piece for The Nation called The Scorching Temperatures Are Turning Prison Cells into Furnaces at KALW.org. Click News and then your call. Sarah Hopkins is a fellow at Inside Climate News. You can also find Sarah's recent piece, U.S. Prisons and Jails Exposed to an Increasing Number of Hazardous Heat Days, on our website. Victoria and Sarah, thank you so much for your important work, and we will have you back soon.